It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
So, we gotta talk about my wife.
Okay.
My wife is very mature, intelligent woman. She's very successful in her career. She has an advanced degree. I consider her one of the few people I'm willing to admit I'm pretty sure is smarter than me. She's got it all. Or she had it all. She might be losing her mind, and we might need to put her in a home.
Mm.
I have currently two living cats, you may recall.
Mm-hmm.
One of them you call Gus.
Yes.
And he's just going around living his best life. He does not give a shit what the end of us think. He's fine. Ugh. The other is Ezzy. Ezzy is quite old. Ezzy has always been, I would have said me. She's always been very big on fuck all of you. Like, I hate everyone. And you don't get to pet her. She comes to you and sits on your lap, facing away from you, out on the edge of your lap, and now you may pet her. And if you don't, she'll turn around and look daggers at you. But, like, no picking up, no, like, no. She doesn't like others of any kind. She hates her brother. As she's gotten older, some of that has mellowed. It's more turned into a sort of, when she needs affection, I need that right now. And she comes up and she's like, you are going to pet me. We're not going to exchange names. We're not going to kiss on the lips. I'm going to leave the money on the counter and we're going to leave. So she's still not what I would call friendly or easygoing. Per se, she's incredibly neurotic. I've talked about that before. She has the kitty version of an eating disorder that is quite bad. And has resulted in multiple trips to the vet. But she's very skinny and she's very small. She's always been small for an adult cat. And so she gets cold very easily. And especially in the winter, she wants to snuggle a little more. We've got various places in the house that have heating pads. And she does the thing that cats have done since the dawn of homes, where she'll sit on a heater vent. Or there's actually a little stool in our bathroom over the heater vent, but for a handle, because it's a fold-up stool, it has a little hole in it. So she likes to sit right there. So there's just this one jet of warm air right on her butt. But Trish was feeling bad because she's cold all the time. So Trish came up with a brilliant idea. Let's get this cat a sweater. And she told me she was going to get Ezzy a sweater. And I said, that is awesome. That is possibly the worst idea you've ever come up with. And I am so here to watch the horrible, horrible fallout that occurs. And in fact, I probably need to tape. And so we've been talking about this for a few days, and I've been like, I want to make this clear. As your life partner, I need you to know, I do not support you in this at all. You are doing this on your own. You are suffering the consequences on your own. I am in the audience laughing my head off.
Okay.
And so she ordered a sweater with a hood for Ezzy, and then ordered two sweaters for Addy, one of which only showed up today, and it's like a preppy sweater, and it's like got a collar underneath that's plaid and stuff, and it's like cable knit, like this is the first time I really feel class guilt. I'm like, there are people out there starving, and my wife bought a nicer sweater and shirt set than I own. But last night, the other two sweaters showed up, one for each of them. So we came home. We went to dinner last night because it's date night. And we came home. And shockingly, was hard to get it on them. And then once it happened, I don't know, you don't have as much experience with cats. Cats do not do well with things on them at all. The most common one is if you put like a leash on them or a sweater or something like that, they walk around low to the ground, like they can duck under whatever it is. And famously, and I want it on the record, I've never done this, and fuck you if you have done this, but a common hoodlum prank to play on cats people have done is put like a piece of tape on one side of them, like on their side, and they will keep walking sideways trying to like get away from whatever it is. Or I think people put tape on their paw pads and they get weirded out. Yeah, they don't like stuff that's like touching them that they don't know what it is and they can't get away from. So how this manifests in my aged tiny cat is the sweater gets on and my wife puts him down, or puts her down, and she just like flops over. And then she gets up again and she's kind of walking weird or whatever. And then she got it on Addy and he didn't like it either. But it was a little easier because his didn't have a hood. I don't know why she got a hood. And then some time, well, a little bit, they both left. And also Addy was really concerned. His sister in a sweater was like a new animal to him. So he kept wanting to like sniff her and see what's going on. And normally she won't let him get that close, but she was so out of it because of this fucking sweater that he's coming up and licking her head and stuff. And she's like, I don't know what's happening. But they both kind of went to the back and we didn't worry about it. And a little while later, Addy comes back out and he doesn't have a sweater on. He managed to get it off himself. I found it later. But Ezzy still has hers. And eventually she kind of calmed down, like she was doing normal things she does, albeit still awkwardly. So like she came up in my lap for a while and things like that, and then eventually she went and sat with Trish, and then after a while Trish felt guilty, so she took the sweater off, and she's really lamenting. She's like, I just wanted her to not be cold. And I'm like, I get that, and that's very sweet, but cats hate that. Like most dogs aren't super into it. You got to have a special one to be into that. And cats. So I don't know where it's going to go from here. But like, I don't know if she's going to try again or what's happening. Again, not involved. Just not. I did take a video. I don't know how much we can show other people because it's actually not that interesting when you watch it. And also it shows too much of our house, which is a disaster. But yeah, I just want people to know. So that if we have to get a divorce, or if my wife turns up dead, just covered in small scratches, like we know that's not my fault. Because, yeah, very weird.
Okay, so smart lady. When she, you said she felt guilty about Ezzy wearing this.
What was
making her feel guilty? Did she think she wasn't
sad? She's like not sitting right or what? Like if you saw a cat acting this way and they weren't wearing a sweater, you'd be like, what's wrong with this cat?
And they weren't wearing a sweater. But if they are wearing a sweater, you know what problem is right away.
100%. And here's again, you probably the least cat person I know, you would still get it too. You'd be like, wow, that cat looks fucked up. Probably because of that really weird sweater on it. Which it appears to be just uncomfortable in. It's the equivalent of if someone dressed us naked and dressed us in a second skin. I think we would probably look about as comfortable as you looked in the sweater. And the hood never got on, by the way. It was always just this lump back here that was, I don't know.
Well, maybe Trish thought that the relative comfort of being warmer would sort of counterbalance. And
no, I'm sure that's definitely what she thought. But we have a lot of I lifted my leg and it was connected. We have, like I said, we have all these hot spots, and she'll there's literally a body pillow on the bed that has a heating pad inside of it that we put in there for the cats. My feet go on a heating pad that's on a small rug right here, and the cats like to come and lay on other parts
of it. And these solutions seem to work perfectly fine for her.
Absolutely.
So there didn't seem to be.
She does always seem like she wants warmth. And one of her nicknames is Cold Paws, because especially in the winter, if she walks on your bare skin, her paw pads are freezing.
Oh.
So her heart was in the right place, but her brain was apparently just gone. But I will update you if anything changes. We might try again. She's also suggested maybe we need to wash them so they don't smell weird. The sweaters, not the cats. So stay tuned. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world that's also a cryptocurrency. That's all the information I have on that. I don't understand it, how to buy it, what it means. I'm sure it's deep in several blockchains. That's a thing, right? I don't. Ethereum. Anyway, I'm Tony.
And I'm William. This is episode 617.
Good work. So, here we are. Peter's
hat coin.
We have a hat. It is magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And people like to write into that email address with whatever the crap they want to make us discuss. Questions, comments, topics, manifestos, what have you. The hat magically on its own hits the forward button, sends them to us. We open them, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored. That is the whole show. And this is our second episode of 2023. Yep. So how's your year been going so far?
Well, I think I said last week that my classes were available on Friday, even though classes technically didn't start off until Monday. I went ahead and started working on things on Friday and over the weekend, but I didn't get a lot done, partly because, I don't even know why. I just didn't feel like part of me was saying, classes don't start till Monday. Just start Monday, you dope. Another part of me was like, yeah, but if I get ahead, that'll take some of the pressure off and so on and so forth. I did get some things done, but not as much as I wanted. I have to, one of the things I tried to do before Monday or to get started before Monday is one of the things I have to do this quarter is I have to go somewhere and attend a group counseling session, like an AA meeting.
Court mandated?
No, I don't, not mandated by the court, mandated by my class.
Oh, because wow. You pissed them off so bad they're making you go to group therapy?
My two classes are group therapy techniques and whatever, and human sexuality. So,
oh my God. Are those going to meet in a capstone at the end that's just an orgy?
No. So, an AA meeting or something, and I've already contacted one group about this, and they said, well, no, we don't really allow people to come to do. And this was a group that the class instruction said I could contact them and likely be able to observe or whatever, and they said no, they don't do that. So
now, does this have to be have an accredited therapist or something, or just a support group?
I guess I'd have to look closer at the instructions,
because if it's the latter, I actually can recommend you one that I think they'd be super fine with. It's a trans support group, but
because it's a class about group therapy techniques, I think they want me to observe a person who's been trained in that.
AA people are. I guess I didn't know that. I don't know about the accreditation behind people who run AA meetings.
Well,
I've never AA'd.
I don't know.
I've AA'd, but I've never.
I don't know
AA'd.
That either. I just know they've mentioned that as a as a someone you can reach out to. But I mean, now that you mention it, I guess they weren't specific about it being something that's led by like a social worker or a counselor or a psychiatrist or anything. I mean, maybe I can check on that because it might be
if
hard.
You're interested, I can connect you, but what else?
Well, okay, we can talk about it later because I actually am interested. If I can get some information, maybe I could ask my instructor. If they say, yeah, that works, then I'll just do that because everything else, I don't know. I mean, and I don't personally care what kind of group it is. I just want I don't want my teachers to say, no, that's not.
Oh, no, absolutely.
But now that you mention it, I'm pretty sure there are Alcoholics Anonymous meetings that aren't particularly run by, I mean, sometimes they're run by clergy. Sometimes they're run by, I mean, maybe the person has some kind of training, but they don't necessarily have an advanced degree in whatever. So maybe it doesn't matter. I don't know. Is this group you're talking about led by? Here's another problem. When I contacted this place, they said that their meetings were peer led. And that was one of the reasons why they didn't just have anybody come to observe. And so one thing I should ask.
I'm not putting those together. Why is being peer led mean you don't have somebody come observe?
Because the impression I got, because they didn't really explain that to me either, but the impression I got was that the people who are leading it aren't trained in any way. They're just they're just helping one another out. The only relevant experience they have is that they're going through some of the same things that these people have gone through. Which means if I ask them, hey, can I go to this meeting? And they say, sure, and I show up at this meeting, this person who's leading it, they're not going to know what to do with me, basically, right? They're not really trained in how to.
But you're just there to observe, right? You're not participating.
Right. But what if that person starts asking me questions? Or what if that person does this? Or what if that person does that? And as the observer, what am I going to do? Because I'm new to this. I'm not going to feel like I can decide whether I speak or don't speak.
All
in
right.
other words.
Well, the group I have, I believe, has no one has any training whatsoever. But I'm also pretty sure. I mean, I can't speak for them, but I'm pretty sure they'd be fine for you to come observe.
Okay. Yeah. Cause I think that's all it is that the reason they said that the group was peer led was so that I would understand that if I was going to observe, they'd have to go to whoever was leading that week, which first they'd have to find out who that was, which they probably don't even always know. Then they'd have to explain to that person who I am and what maybe they should do about me being there. They just didn't want to go to that trouble. Just
oh, well, okay. Then that is better. This does have consistent leadership. There are two people who are running it.
Yeah.
The only other thing is I think they're now mixing it up where every other meeting is a social event rather than a support group. So that could be a factor too, but we can talk about it offline. This is not good podcasting.
Sorry. I was just trying to explain what they told me about why I couldn't participate.
I mean, and they're all alcoholics. I don't trust them anymore.
No, this group was about everybody.
Especially if
they
won't give you their name.
Everybody in this group just was dealing with a particular mental illness.
Oh.
That was their thing.
Mentaholics Anonymous.
But they did suggest a different group. But then when I looked up that group, their webpage, I didn't see anything in there that suggested that they would let anyone, there wasn't even an easy way to contact them. So I didn't know why they suggested them. So anyway, I have to do this before week 8. So that's 7 weeks away. I have to figure that out. But most of the stuff I did before Monday was administrative stuff like that. Cause there were a few other things you had to do and I had to do some things with my financial aid. But the last couple of days I've been kind of really, reading more and doing the schoolwork more. And the textbook in my human sexuality class, the first chapter wasn't very good. This is the first experience I've had.
You sent me some of it.
Yeah. But this is the first textbook where that's happened. And I'm like laughing.
It's just so vague and sloppy.
Weird language choice.
It very much sounded like an essay that the writer had no one read over rather than a textbook.
Right? The first chapter was very much like that. Now, the third chapter wasn't as bad. For some reason,
we talked about the second chapter.
Well, we skipped the second chapter. Now I'm reading the second chapter now, and it's actually pretty good. It's about theories and stuff. She covers sociobiology and evolutionary psychology, and she critiques them soundly.
Is this in a class about? Is this in your human sexuality class?
Mm-hmm.
Why did they choose there?
They're going over several different theories of human sexuality, including psychoanalysis.
I guess they do have okay. So it specifically is talking about it within the context of human sexuality, and mm-hmm. Evo Psych has a lot to say about human sexuality. Mm-hmm.
And I think she correctly critiqued them as being, like, for one thing, she said about sociobiology correctly that it had a fairly naive and simplistic view of evolution in general, which it does. And that's a huge weakness. And and she talked about how evolutionary psychology really has some of the same weaknesses. So I was satisfied with, I felt like she could have critiqued them more and even been a little bit more decisively kind of against them, I guess. She left a lot of room.
In chapter four, she says, fuck those guys.
I mean, she leaves a lot of room for someone reading to go, I can kind of buy that, which I don't, no, it's just so no. But whatever. I mean, most of the texts do that, by the way. Most of the texts, when they talk about other theories, they seem very diplomatic, like they don't want to step on anyone's toes who might think.
Well, you are really skirting the line there of science versus social science in a way where no school of therapy is going to be able to rock solid, like, prove they're the way to go. Nope,
that's right.
Suppose you don't want to do the opposite and say, like, this is absolute bullshit either, even though Evo Psych is absolute bullshit.
You're right. I think that's what's really going on.
I'm not a therapist.
But it's a good, this chapter's good, so I'm hoping that the rest of the book will go fine. The teacher seems good. My peers, as always, are good. So I really look forward to this class. This class I've looked forward to as almost as much as the abnormal psych class. Because
you're such a pervert.
Well, because our culture is so terrible when it comes to, you know, allowing people to sort of grow into their own sexuality, that I'm going to, as a sort of a general practitioner, I'm going to see a lot of people who, if sexuality isn't part of their primary presenting issue, it's going to be in there somewhere. It's going to be part secondary or tertiary issue for sure, because that it's just how it is with people in our culture, because it's so terrible when it comes to allowing people just to sort of, you know, grow into their own when it comes to their sexuality and expressing themselves and choosing who to love and all that stuff. And it's pretty rare for a person to get through their childhood and puberty unscathed by the destructive messages of sexuality and intimacy and relationships and stuff that you get from our culture. So I just know that's going to be something that I have to deal a lot with.
Well, now you've done it.
What?
There's a topic I've had in my back pocket for a while that I haven't brought up. And then just before this, I was like, I should bring it up. And then I was like, nah, it'll just take a while. I won't do it. But now I think I have to, because it just dovetails so nicely. But now we're going to spend all the time talking about this. We're not even going to get to what I did this week. And we're not going to get to a question, because this is going to be such a rabbit hole. But okay. I do want to talk about this. And I was going to talk to you about this personally anyway.
Okay.
I want to talk about a YouTube channel I've been watching.
Oh.
Called Sex Positive Gaming.
Mm. Interesting.
It is. because it is not entirely what I sort of would have expected. I don't remember why it is YouTube threw this at me. I mean, I spend a lot of time in the more prurient ends of the internet, but not generally on YouTube, because YouTube doesn't have prurient ends for the most part. Or if they do, they're really crappy and you can go to places and get better versions. But I don't know why. One of these popped in and I was like, this is weird. And then I watched more of it. Oh, I think I do remember what it is. Okay, so anyway. Yeah. Sex Positive Gaming is a channel that has been around, I believe, since February 2021. I believe.
Oh, relatively it is new.
It is a one-person channel. As far as I can tell, there's only one person in it. I mean, maybe there's behind this. I don't know. But her name is Annie. She is a young-ish woman. White woman. I've seen a couple times she's done live streams of non-sex games. And so you can see her. So I've seen her a couple times. You know what she looks like. I want to put this out there up front because this is a weird point. She has what I consider a very dull cadence to her voice. She is not built for orating or for narrating YouTube videos, in my opinion. Now, she's perfectly clear, she's perfectly eloquent, she just has and it's not like she's talking in monotone, but it very much sounds like, oh, just some quiet person just sort of talking, and it's weird. You get used to it. And I specify it because it's the only real flaw I see, and it's not something she can control. But I do find it funny because when I first started, I'm like, this little sort of timid female voice talking about the channel is reviewing adult content games, is what it is.
Are there a lot of those?
Oh yes.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yes. There always have been. There's a huge history of porn and video games that for a long time was a problem in that it just didn't ever translate. Uncanny valleys and things got in the way and it just sort of never worked. We're now in an age where graphical technology and more importantly, consumer graphical technology and development tools is so much better than it used to be. And animation has become so popular, both for kids and for adults, that now we're sort of in a place. There are still people who will probably, even if they were looking for that sort of thing, would find it awkward because of the sort of technology levels. But she reviews games with adult content.
Okay.
A lot of ones off of Patreon, a lot of ones off of Steam, because there are a lot of them on Steam. Other places, itch.io has a category of these and stuff. I don't generally play these, so I don't really understand why I watch these. But the best way I can put this is, if for some reason you were forced to do a YouTube channel reviewing sex games, this is how you would do it. Well, assuming you were forced to do it, but for some reason you still wanted to do a good job. Because, I mean, there is a version where you're forced to do it and you're just like, yeah, whatever, bye. But, like, I'll put it this way. She talks in great detail about the games and she reviews them just sounding like a normal person. And I've watched many of her videos. I could not remotely tell you what any of her particular kinks or preferences are, including sexual orientation. Like, she doesn't put that stuff in there. Because it's not relevant. Like, what turns her on is not relevant to what I'm going to want to play.
Right.
What she does talk about, she calls them flavors. But as part of her review, she will say, in terms of flavors, and the most common thing she says when she starts that, because the industry is in a certain direction, she usually has to say, in terms of flavors, this is a mostly male heterosexual game. And then she'll go in and flavors can include, and she just talks about different kinks that can exist sort of within that community so that people can know if they're interested. And beyond that, she talks about the game. How did it look? How does the story work? how immersive was the story, how much, oh, and she'll talk about, in terms of sex, she'll talk about, like, are there actual sex cutscenes, or is it just pictures? Is there voice acting? How quality of it? Things like that. She doesn't, and she will say, like, I liked this game or I didn't like this game. But she's leaving her sexual preferences out of it, which A, is smart, because again, hers have nothing to do with mine. She just says what's in the game. And if I like that, then I know. And if I don't, then I don't. And it also makes it very much more comfortable and professional. So, like I think you would enjoy these videos. And that you might not, because it's still showing things. And even though it's censored, you might be like, this is weird. But I like her. And I mean, and there's broad ranges of games, including text-based ones and stuff in some cases. Or games that are really, like, fully made, like, RPGs and stuff that just have some sex in them in places, but are mostly still just a game. And it also has shown me the broad spectrum of these games out there that people are making. And a lot of them are sort of personal labors of love with people who have gotten a hold of Unity or RPG Maker or RenPy. There's a bunch of essentially pieces of software you can buy to make your own video game. And people use these and make these video games. But
so what's the thing, like, so, like, in Dragon Age, sometimes you're a person can have a relationship with someone else and they'll have a sex scene. It's not terribly explicit.
Yes.
Is that what determines it, how explicit the scene is or how long the scene is? Or, I mean, what
is that? What define it in the question?
Sorry. Asked. What determines if a game is an adult orient, you know, has adult content and that she would review?
Well, that's a very good question. In general, there needs to be some sexual content, and I think it needs to probably be at least somewhat explicit, even if it's only in text. But it's, these are all adults only kind of games.
Oh,
they're not mature kind of things.
I see.
But I mean, I don't know in particular the game, all the games she's ever reviewed that I've seen. Well, almost, I'm getting to that. There's another level to this. But basically all the games I've seen that she has have nudity in it and have explicit either images or animation cutscenes and things like that.
Okay.
There's also she also has a very strong political bent as related to this. I believe the reason she does this is not just because she's super into sex, but because she's super not into censorship and kink shaming. In fact, her tagline for her channel, that she, her closer at the end of every video, is no shaming, just gaming. And in fact, when she has to mention a particular flavor or something that is more controversial, she'll say, if you don't like that, you shouldn't play this game, but also don't kink shame if you're into that, whatever. And she will talk at length about the idea, and this will, I'm certain, come up in your class, that virtual or media experience outlets for, well, it's the same way that, for what studies there have been, video games where you violently do things actually frequently help people not have violent outbursts in their life.
They're
because
therapeutic.
It's cathartic, and it deals with their fantasies.
Right.
And she's very big on that too. She's like, whatever sexual kink you're into in a video game, that's a great place for it, because it's just a fantasy. It's nothing to be ashamed of. And it helps you deal with that fantasy process and enjoy that fantasy without going out and fucking with anybody else.
Well, sure. And there, of course, there's evidence that it doesn't make you go do it.
No.
There's some evidence of the opposite.
Maybe even the opposite. Yeah.
Some evidence of the opposite, where it gets it out of your system, so you're less likely to do it.
And she's also, oh, sorry.
No. I was just going to say that for the people who do go out and do some of those things, it's not because they're reading a book or playing a video game or having a conversation, or even because they're talking to someone online. That's something has nothing to do with those things.
And in some cases, can be a nature of repressing those urges rather than finding a way to process them and deal
with
them.
Correct. That's correct.
So yeah, quite the opposite. But she also speaks very strongly about censorship hypocrisy. She will regularly talk about games, and this has been a thing for years. Steam has adult games. Steam has a somewhat shifting, somewhat arbitrary, and somewhat not uniformly applied set of rules about what is or is not allowed in terms of adult content.
Hmm.
Which brings me to the other kind of video I've seen her do just a couple times. But it was the first video I saw, and this is why I got, I believe, the first video. There is a new Disney game called Disney Dreamville or something. It's a live service thing where it's just an open world, and like you interact with different Disney characters, and you can build a, you know, it's like all the, it's like Genshin Impact, but it's all Disney based or whatever. And the title of the video I saw was Disney blah 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 review, and or review of whatever the game was, and the Child Brides of Disney. And I was like, excuse me? So then I clicked on the thing. She really loves video games. The first couple minutes of it was a genuine review of that game. And she in general likes it, although it sounds like they're putting it out with, there's a lot of missing content at this point. So maybe it's not a good one to go into now. But she talked about that. But then she talked about the fact, because this is available on Steam.
Okay.
And most Disney princesses, especially the older ones, like the from the older movies,
mm-hmm.
are underage, canonically.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's like, true.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And in some cases, the one I found out from a totally unrelated thing the other day is apparently in the first Aladdin, Jasmine is not quite 16 and Aladdin is 18. So that's a little creepy. But so she's talking about how there these, so Disney has this thing and they have these characters who are like in their teens and they have romances and stuff. They don't have sex, but they still have, like, they get married and things like that. And Steam is fine with that. But a similar situation, say, in an adult game that has adult content, but also has something involving an underage person not involved in sex, but just, like, anything similar to that, Steam will frequently axe it.
Hmm.
And sort of the weird hypocrisy there. And, like, will Steam get rid of this? Because Steam has had to be very serious and, like, very explicit, like, this is what gets you kicked off of Steam. And she's like, technically Disney's doing that with this game. We'll see if they get canceled. And they don't. So, or sometimes she has to talk about how games were on Steam and then they got removed. She also, I should mention, has a Patreon that we all should support, because almost every single one of her videos gets demonetized.
Oh,
because she censors things and all that, but I mean, she's, and she doesn't use swear words or slang terms or anything like that. Like I said, you'd be fine watching these just fine. But the content, like, there are certain things that are, if you talk about it, YouTube flags it immediately. So she makes very little money off of her YouTube channel. But it's just, I almost feel like, I mean, I will admit, I've watched enough of these now. I'm like, maybe I can try some of these games. I don't know. Because I have tried them in the past, and they're just sort of unfulfilling in the sense that I like playing video games and I like sexy things, but the two don't interact well for, like, either I'm annoyed that there's this much distracting sex in my video game, or I'm annoyed that this video game is making me video game so much to get to the sex I want. So it often doesn't work for me, but I'm watching these videos, I have been thinking, like, maybe I'll try. But for the most part, I think I watch them because I'm appreciating the academic ship of it.
Mm.
Like the way she's approaching this and the things she's saying about the industry and about how we handle sex. And she, I mean, like I said, I don't, unless she's one of those John Waters type omnisexuals, she's playing a lot of games that have kinks she's not into, and she still is fine with, like, because she will seriously be like, I really liked this game, or I really, this one was a little boring or whatever. And it has no Like, I'm not, I don't think you go through and figure out like what she's into based on this. She's just like, she'll talk about it. She has some videos she has called Flavor of the Week, which is basically she'll be like, here's a popular flavor that people are into, and here's several games that have that flavor and do it pretty well. And even also some videos where she will do a dive into why is this a popular flavor? Like, what do people get out of this?
Interesting. That's interesting.
There's a little bit of an emphasis on Western games because Eastern, especially Japan, has had games like this for eons and still do. And it's sort of a difference. And we, in the same way that anime, now you kind of have some Western animes that are heavily, same sort of thing, though. There's a lot of stuff that is being heavily influenced by Eastern ones, but it's sort of their own thing. And there's lots of different ways to do it. I'm learning a lot about different software programs and what they can do, because she'll say, like, this was made with this, so clearly they did this. And, like, apparently there's a couple of resources for 3D assets that are very commonly used. So there's an issue where, like, a lot of these games have characters and things that look remarkably similar to each other because there's a limited number, and also you can sort of tell by the look this clearly came from this software and that kind of thing. And some of them are very different, and some of them, when I saw the review, I was like, yeah, that's barely got any adult content, it just looks like a game, but it looks fun. And some of them that are down, and it's Patreon, so there's always, so many of them are Patreon based, so there's a lot of like, this looks like a good start, we'll see how quickly they update it, because that's the thing with indie games nowadays. You build something and then you put it out in early access, and then it's there for like 8 years while you keep adding in new builds. Even big companies do that now. So there's that component. And sometimes she'll go back and review a game after it's been out for a while and what that's about and things like that. And it's just fascinating to me. And not explicit, not inappropriate. I mean, again, she'll blur out, you know, nudity, but some of these games, like the shot of the woman in the bikini with the huge breasts, like that'll still be on the screen. So you might still find that a little awkward, but I really like what she's doing, and it's really impressive to me how she's approaching this. And she clearly loves video games and is very much in favor of free sexual expression. And that's sort of what is pushing this, I think. And it's very cool. And in certain circles, she's getting quite a name for herself. I've read articles about her because the adult entertainment industry and the video game industry are both paying attention to this kind of thing. So,
you know, as you're talking about this, I am thinking about if this didn't exist, a combination between video games and adult entertainment, and it's making me think of that 30 Rock episode where
no exactly that 30 Rock episode nails it.
Okay.
That Judah Friedlander's character in that 30 Rock episode explains to Tracy Morgan's character why porn video games have never worked, and it's a pretty accurate explanation.
Yeah, I think when I heard that, I thought to myself, yeah, that sounds right. And so I guess I thought, this isn't a thing. This would never work, because people who like porn wouldn't want it to be interrupted with a video game, and people who like video games wouldn't want it to be interrupted with porn. It's like, that's just not going to work. But they do, it is a thing. And you're saying that there are some people who like this particular kind of thing, or is it something that people who like porn tolerate the game parts, or people who like games tolerate the porn parts, or is there a kind of person who likes both?
I don't think so, because if you just wanted video games, you could find better than most of these indie titles.
Okay.
And if you just wanted sex, the internet exists.
Right.
But there's also a huge spectrum in the type of game. And again, from my experience, because in my brain, I should be super into this. So periodically I try it out again and I'm like, not really. But like, like when I was younger and I first found out this could be a thing, I was like way excited because I love video games and I love porn. So I'm like, hey, but they vary from, on one extreme, what the Japanese call a visual novel, which doesn't have to be adult content, but they often are, which is almost just you watching a story and you occasionally have to click, and frequently like, you pick, you have like three options of what to say, and that may impact the story, or it may just impact their response. But it's sort of you just going through a story and pictures and stuff. And that's, there's a lot of adult content that's that. On the far other end are ones that are like full on open world fantasy RPGs that just have like those same, you know, like some RPGs have, well, like Dragon Age, you said, where you can like gain a relationship and stuff. And the only difference is when you achieve that, it's much more explicit.
Mm.
There's also ones that are like RPGs, but there's like a perverse kink to it. Like, oh, that becomes a thing where, like, yeah, you're in a dungeon, right, but all the monsters you're fighting are actually sexy girls and things like that. okay. That kind of thing. So there's a huge variety. But I personally, I didn't get this from her. I personally think there's a combination of technology has gotten better in terms of this stuff, because the earliest known adult game was from the Atari console, and it was called Custer's Revenge. And it not only was the most offensive and problematic thing ever invented, it also looked like shit, because it was like stick figures made with giant pixels having sex. I think.
How did you even know?
It was, yeah. But like, technology has gotten much better about this. I think we are also in an age where people appreciate animation and can get into it, even though it's just pictures, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I know people whose entire erotica has to be animated because of the problems associated with the adult industry. They right. feel uncomfortable watching other porn because they're like, those people were almost certainly exploited.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if it's a drawing, it's like, yeah, nobody did something bad to that drawing.
Mm-hmm.
But where was it? Oh, yeah. So I think that's the thing also. And then I think a lot of it, again, is Japan did it. Japan got into these sort of interactive games, and you can also get visual novels and things that are really deep stories, like in really moving things. And some of them also involve sex. But like, and I saw a recent one, somebody's trying to build, and it's amazing. I would say it is a game that looks like Mass Effect. Mm-hmm. Like, because I saw her playing, it's still sort of in the demo stage. But like, it looks that good, and it has weapons and your squad, everything like that, and tons of gameplay. There's just also lots of things you can have sex with, like built into it. So it really is merging them. So I really think technology and a little bit of how society has gone has made this more viable. It's still, there's uncanny valley issues. And like I said, I run into things where I'm like, this sex is distracting my video game, or this video game is distracting my sex. But
I think two things that I underestimate here before the conversation started, maybe I'm starting to get a little handle on, is I always underestimate like kinks. I always underestimate how important it is to people who have what they would call kinks to see that in a movie or any story, much less a video game. I always underestimate that. But also I'm thinking about Dragon Age, and I'm thinking, what if it was the exact same game, except during the sex scenes, you could like make choices about what they did, and you could see explicitly what they were doing. How would that change the game, other than the rating it had and who they could sell it to? It wouldn't change it at all. And some people could skip all that if they wanted. Some people could do something with it if they wanted, but otherwise it would just be a video game with relationships and sex.
In the same way that currently in those types of games, you never have to do the romance.
Yeah, right. That's right.
You can just play it.
That's right. But even if you did and the sex scene came up, you wouldn't have to like play the mini game that is the sex stuff. You could just go past it.
But and do you remember when the first Mass Effect came out and everybody freaked out because there was sex in it?
No, I don't. I remember them freaking out a little that you could have same-sex relationships. I remember that.
That was also part of it. But no, they were like, there's a sex scene. And also, they lied their asses off about what it was. But no, there was a huge hue and outcry. Like, this game is a sexual simulator, and you can do all this stuff. And no, 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 no. And I mean, when I heard it, I was like, really? And then I played it, and I was like, no.
No.
There is arguably some tiny bit of nudity in it. Arguably. It's also incredibly short, and I had no control over any of it.
Right, right. And you, I mean, you knew that sex happened. You knew that.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
but
yeah.
You didn't have anything really to do with it, except setting up the relationship. Yeah, except setting up the relationship and maybe seeing someone's bare backside or something.
I think that, I think we got a butt cheek or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, this is the thing that the video, the majority of the video game industry is scared of this because they think people will be offended and they won't buy it. You know, it's the same way that movies don't want to get explicit because then it would have a rating so that fewer people could go see it and other people would judge it harshly just for the existence of such a thing. So mainstream, you don't get a lot of that. It is creeping there. People really like these relationship mechanics, so we're getting more of those. And of course, with an indie game, you're not beholden to anyone except the rules of whoever's going to host it.
Right.
So, but yeah, I think she's fascinating. I would highly recommend people check her out. Again, it is called Sex Positive Gaming is the name of the channel. And you should look at it. It's very cool. Yeah, there's no way we're getting to a question because I still got to talk about my week. Because I do actually have shit to talk about. So you remember how last week was the worst for me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
After New Year's, I couldn't get my shit together. And then I got the UTI. And then I spent the 8 hours in the ER and one hour.
Are you better, by the way? Are you? I mean, you said.
Yes. It's UTIs and antibiotics, unless you've got the wrong one. Almost like within 24 hours, all symptoms gone. And I know this because I'm a goddamn expert at this point.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
It's awful. But yeah, no, that's all fine. And so then Wednesday, I sort of slept all day. And then Thursday was crazy busy because lunch with you and David, and then I had to drop you off and then come home. So like Thursday just sort of disappeared in a poof of doing stuff. Mm-hmm. And then Friday, I slipped and fell in my own kitchen.
Oh, no. What happened?
I don't know. I guess maybe there was something slick on the tiles or whatever. My foot went out in front and then the rest of me fell onto it. And it kind of, my ankle and my knee kind of hurt, but I got up and I was like, I'll be careful. And I sat down and then I think it was time for my call with my sister and I talked to her for a while. I don't know. Eventually I've been sitting on the couch for an hour or two and I get up and I can barely walk.
Oh no.
My ankle is fucked.
Oh no.
I was having a hell of a time. And I was going, like, I tried to sleep, but I couldn't find a position that didn't start hurting. And then I would try and come out here. And so that whole day was shot to hell. Trish finally came home and she wrapped in an ACE bandage, which immobilized it some, which helped. And then she was here also. So I didn't have to get up for anything anymore unless I needed to use the bathroom. And by the next day, I could get around, but it still hurt. And so I've been careful not to be on it. But within a couple of days, it was fine again.
Okay.
But that was very confusing to me because it was really bad.
Yeah.
But I think it was just a strain and a couple days of not fucking around with it. Like I ordered my groceries for pickup this week instead of walking around Hy-Vee and all that. But now I'm fine. But it means that week is essentially 100% bullshit. That was a very bad week. This week, much better so far.
Good.
I gotta talk about a couple of shows and things. All right, saw some movies. I cannot remember one of them. This has been bothering me. I wanted to tell my sister, and I asked Trish about it. I am confident that since I last talked to you, we have seen two movies that are worth talking about. I cannot remember one of them, and neither can Trish. And I don't mean like what was it called? Like maybe I'm insane and we didn't actually see another movie, but I feel like we did.
Yeah.
I just can't remember what it was. I'm only going to talk about the other one, I guess. We saw Glass Onion.
Oh, okay.
Did you see Glass Onion?
Yeah. All right. I think I said so, but I don't remember.
I don't listen to you, so I don't know.
Yeah, I said I liked it better than the previous one.
No, I definitely don't remember that. That would have jumped out at me.
Pretty sure I said that.
Oh, wow. I did not. Well, there's a lot. My opinion of Glass Onion is quite nuanced in my opinion of my opinion. I enjoyed Glass Onion a lot. I recommend watching it. It's a fun time. There are, as with Knives Out, there are great performances. It's really nicely shot and just produced in general. It's a good time. It's entertaining as fuck. I wasn't super into the mystery. I think this is a thing happening in modern murder mystery shows and movies and stuff, is to make it exciting and new and different. They put so many things in that at a certain point you're like, but that's not how anything would actually happen.
Yeah, that part of it was not interesting to me at all.
And it very much felt that way to me. But yeah, more so, once we resolved the, you know, so like every mystery has to be resolved. And if it's a TV show, the mystery is resolved. The person gives a very short monologue about why they did it, and then they're taken away by the police. But sometimes, like in this one, the mystery is solved and then hijinks ensue at the end there. And this happened here. The mystery is solved and then it's like 20 minutes for the climax and resolution and everything. I hated, full on hated, everything that happened after the mystery was solved. In that, I thought it showed a whole bunch of people acting out of character. The ethics of it was insane. And the result that we were supposed to believe happened, and the results that the people in the movie said they thought would happen, I'm like, there's no way any of that's happening after this. No, none of this is going the way you say. None of this should have gone the way you did so far. If you'd done this instead, it would have been much better. And at this point, you're basically all terrible, including the people who are saving the day.
Yeah.
So that was a problem for me. The last like 20 minutes or so, I hated, and it kind of messed up the rest for me. But I don't think everybody's had as strong of an opinion about that. But yeah, in general, it was pretty fun.
I have to admit that when I was done watching it, and I felt like I, like you said, had a good time, like watching it, I didn't feel like I could recommend it to anybody, because, you know, just about everyone you recommend it to is going to expect to see a good murder mystery kind of thing, which to me it wasn't. It's not what I got out of it. I hear a lot of people criticizing all the plot holes and stuff, and I'm like, yep, that's true, don't care. I kind of liked watching, one of the reasons why I was probably okay with that last 20 minutes was because I liked oh my gosh, why am I blanking on her name?
Janelle Monáe.
Yeah, I love her. I just
Janelle
love watching.
Monáe's amazing.
I just love watching her doing whatever. And someone criticized her. Well, I'm not going to say, because that's going to be a spoiler. But
yeah, no, that I know exactly what you were going to say. It is, I think, possibly a legitimate criticism. It is also a huge spoiler to talk about. So don't do it.
Well, the criticism I heard,
I almost said the same thing, because I was like, oh yeah, you mean, and then I was like, oh no, wait, let's not do that.
Right. The criticism that I heard was not legitimate, in my opinion. But,
oh, okay.
But I think she's just amazing. I love it when she gets.
I thought it was legitimate. It was a minor criticism that a lot of movies get. So I'm like, whatever.
But I mean, I don't know. I must have gone into it with really low expectations, or because Knives Out also I didn't think was much of a like murder mystery or whatever. So I just wasn't even expecting that.
This is what I wonder, because I enjoyed Knives Out a lot more. But I don't know if that had to do with me and my place in the space-time continuum at the time. I don't know if I go back and watch Knives Out now, if I will like it as well. And it may be, and this is the thing I'm starting to wonder about Rian Johnson. Rian Johnson is doing a lot of things with his movies that other people traditionally haven't done, at least not within the high budget, well-produced sphere. And the luster is starting to come off, and I'm starting to wonder if a lot of what I liked about his things is just the novelty. I think Knives Out was a sort of mystery film like I hadn't seen before. It was nostalgic to earlier murder mysteries, but it had components and ways of doing it that were novel, and maybe I enjoyed that, and maybe even Last Jedi. Same deal. Maybe a lot of what I liked about Last Jedi was the subversion and the novelty of what he did, because Glass Onion is doing a lot of these same things, and I'm starting to be like, it's a very Rian Johnson subverting expectations in every single movie is starting to make me think of M. Night Shyamalan making every movie about a final twist. And when M. Night Shyamalan does it right, it's great. But for the most part, we all loved M. Night Shyamalan stuff because it was surprising. And once we stopped being surprised, we were all like, oh, wait a second. Right. And so I'm worried this is the beginning of the end of my love affair with Rian Johnson.
I get it. I think for me, I think Knives Out and Glass Onion were the same this way. And this even though there were a lot of things in the film that would normally bother me, like plot holes and stuff, I feel like he gives all of the actors, and this case, Glass Onion, not all of them, I didn't feel like.
But
he gives
all but one of the actors.
Yeah.
Well, two, actually.
He gives a lot of the actors a chance to show some range, choose some scenery where they might not have roles like that in the past.
Where it's fun to watch.
Yeah, I think it's just that. It's like, it's shot well and all that stuff. So the plot, don't care. I mean, I'm watching all these actors clearly having a good time, and it's like, it's fun. It's just
100%. 100%.
Yeah.
That is why I do recommend this movie to watch on those terms.
Yeah.
Specifically.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it is some fantastic performances, with the exception of Leslie Odom Jr., who did his best, but was given absolutely nothing to work with.
Agreed. That's too bad, too.
Another character who is like the only actor I can't name, and I'm not entirely sure why the character was even in the movie. But yeah, otherwise it's a, and it's, we got fucking Kate Hudson, fucking Catherine Hahn, who I love to death. Ed Norton-ing his best. Like, Ed Norton, you either love or hate in a performance. This is one you'll love. Daniel Craig, of course, Benoit blanking all over the place. Batista playing to Batista's strengths.
Yeah, right.
It was
right.
A good time. My jury is still out on whether or not Dave Batista is a good actor. But if you cast him in the right thing, he's good. And this was the right thing to cast him.
Well, I mean, he is acting. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
I realize he's not playing a character. He's pretty much just playing himself. But, I mean, there are people that can't even do that. So he's clearly.
Yeah. No, I like him. But you have to be. Actually, there's a movie coming out not too long from now that I've seen the trailer for. And he's in that. And it seems like a very different role. And I'm very curious how that's going to play out.
In the M. Night Shyamalan movie, you mean?
Yeah. That I'm either really going to want to see or really not going to want to see. And I'm going to have to wait and see how other people, like, I don't know. That could go. I don't think it's a movie I would feel mediocre about.
Okay.
So we'll have to see what's going on there. But yeah, the performances are just amazing. There are also some incredibly awesome cameos that I think are at least partially based on. The movie is set during the height of COVID. May 2020. I think it was also filmed relatively close to that time. So I think a lot of these people do cameos because they had nothing else going on at the time. But it's the cameos are really fun. And at least one, it took me a couple days later to realize all the implications of one of them. And it was brilliant. But for some reason at the moment, like, I had all the facts and I just hadn't put it together. But again, spoilers, so I won't say it here. But yeah, so it's a fun time, not a particularly good mystery, and I think has an absolute shit resolution, but it is an entertaining film, and I do recommend it on
especially if you think you like these actors, which I
yeah
I I was really excited to see all these people play together, and it was fun to watch. So you're not going to, I don't think you're just going to feel like a waste of time.
I also feel, and again, I feel like there was a level of social meta, like subtext within this, that I found both heavy-handed and vaguely disingenuous. And I didn't enjoy that. And I didn't feel like Knives Out had that.
No.
So that was a, and in fact, a friend of mine really, I mentioned that we saw this movie and they were like, oh, I love that movie. And I was like, of course you did.
I basically ignored all that stuff. I
get why you did.
I just watched the actors being awesome. I just thought,
yeah,
it was fun to watch. That's all.
So yeah, and it's on Netflix. So unless you're my mom, which actually my mom at the moment does have a Netflix subscription, go check it out. Yeah, somebody gifted her a trial. And so, let's talk about Doom Patrol.
Sure.
You've watched all that has aired?
Unless, well, we saw the first season or first episode of, I don't think we've seen any episodes of this season.
Of season four, which is apparently the last one. Because the other day, HBO Max was telling me that finale part one was airing. So,
I think they're
wrapping stuff up.
Yeah, we've seen everything up to the current season, whatever that is.
The fourth season is the current season.
And how many episodes have aired?
No idea. Because I'm not there.
All right, I'm not there either.
But help me with this one, if you can remember correctly.
Okay.
The first two seasons were back when it was on that DC streaming service, wasn't it? Wasn't it two full seasons? And then third season was when it moved to HBO Max?
I completely forgot. But I think you're right. At least the first one could have been two. Could have been two, yeah. I don't remember, though, because I forgot about that.
But this is good. So you have seen all I have seen and more. So you can help speak to this. And again, I don't want to spoil it for people who want to watch it. I'm not recommending it, but I'm also not recommending it. I just have to tell you some things. Okay. So. The show is a hot mess.
Yeah, for sure.
We went through, because we watch a season of some, I've talked before, we watch a season, and then we'll watch something else, and then we'll watch a season again. We don't binge a whole show, generally speaking. We watched season one, all of season one, and all of season two. And I'm going to say, I don't think either of us enjoyed that at all. Like, they're just, everybody's so shitty, and it's so meant to be like dark and gritty. It's very 90s anti-hero, but in a way that gave me nothing to enjoy. But what it is total batshit. Yeah. You are never prepared for anything.
No.
And some of that has to do with, I know the artist who did a lot of the source, the comic book writer who did a lot of the source material, and that's his whole shtick, so that seems accurate. But it is done to such a degree that it's like nothing matters.
Yep.
Because, we're in this problem. We're going to invent a new thing that'll solve this problem. We're never going to mention that new thing again.
Yep.
Or we're going to have this really intriguing moment that we are never going to pay off again. So, like, it's dark. It's uncomfortable. It's gritty. Everyone is always yelling fuck at each other really angrily. And none of it is consistent. None of it pays off. Everybody has to relearn their lessons all the time. It's not good. I don't enjoy it. I didn't think so, but we're still watching it. And you know, you get into, if you watch something long enough, you get feelings for the characters and stuff like that. So we start third season and the first episode happens and it's the same. It's not worse, but it's not better. And Trish is like, you know what? I think I'm done. And I was like, okay, I don't know why, but I think I'm going to try to continue. But when I say this, I know it probably won't happen because I'm me. And I know in the past, if we're watching a show together and she drops out, often I don't pick it up. Weirdly, though, I decided to on this, and I have seen two more episodes of season three.
Mm-hmm.
And I have, and I do not use this word lightly, enjoyed them. I actually liked watching them and didn't get mad at my TV and was intrigued and was and had feels about it other than just frustration and confusion. And I cannot tell if the show is suddenly getting better, or I think this is more likely, they've just broken me. I just have Stockholm syndrome now.
Okay, but in season three, isn't there a character introduced that's played by a particular person?
Yes. And when I was asking friends about it, no. Here's the thing. That character showed up for like a minute and then recently showed up again for like less than a minute. Mm. And I believe the next episode, that character is going to get more involved. But at this point, they have not been involved enough to warrant saying that's the reason.
Okay. All right.
Because, yeah, somebody else was like that too. And I was like, no, that probably helps. But we haven't got there. But just, I don't know what it is. Well, and I thought maybe it was getting better, but then I would explain some of it to Trish, and she's like, no, that still sounds dumb. I don't care.
For me, I think the anticipation of this person having more to do with it down the road gave me more buy-in for the earlier
maybe
things,
and I do love this personally. Actor, but I've also seen this actor do some bullshit, so
I guess I didn't feel like the third season at any point was better.
Yeah, I think I might watch just be broken now. I think, well, I might maybe just be broken, but could be. It's very weird for me.
My biggest problem with Doom Patrol is I have all the same problems that you know, everything you said I agree with, but my biggest problem is that, you know, these characters, you could do more with their particular condition, whatever it is, and they don't really. No. There's nothing really about their character arcs that deal with the condition and or power that they have. It's just like it doesn't even matter what it is.
I'm going to do you one better. With these characters and this show, you could do so much more with blank and they don't.
I know. That's true. But
that's the whole thing. The show is nothing but a creative stream of consciousness.
Yeah.
And it's incredibly creative, bordering on random.
Yeah.
But and a lot of the things it's pulling in, I don't want to give them too much credit because a lot of things it's pulling in from the comic books.
Right.
Because even some things I know, I'm like, oh, yeah, I know. Because there's actually, depending on how you look at it, a spinoff of Sandman or a spinoff of a spinoff of Sandman comes into this show.
Oh.
You may not remember because it's a little bit subtle, but it did originate in Sandman. But it doesn't hold together. They have what is a thing that bugs me more and more with TV shows in general. Character growth always seems to just immediately go away again.
Right. Yeah. That is annoying.
So I don't know, but I'm like I said, it's not that I'm like, this is better now. I'm just like, I'm enjoying it and I'm having feelings about the characters. I'm like, oh, that's so cool. Oh, they're like, oh, I love the, there were two characters that didn't interact very much before and they had got to interact in the last one I saw. And I was like, I love their dynamic. It's so cool. Like, really? I do. I hated both of those characters. Why do I like them now? Like, I don't know what it is, but yeah, you're broken to me.
They broke you.
Yeah, huh. I think it's just Stockholm syndrome, but
interesting.
But that was the new show we were going to watch. Now we're not because she's not watching it. So I have finally talked her into starting Russian Doll season two.
Hmm.
You watched Russian Doll, right?
No.
Highly recommend.
No, maybe we'll do that.
Another show on Netflix. It is a very complicated show that is very easy to spoil, but I'm going to go out on a limb here and reveal things that are revealed if you watched a trailer for this show. I think that's fair. The lead in the show is Natasha Lyonne.
Right. Who I like her.
I like her too. I mean, and she disappeared, but she famously is sort of a child or teen star that then had a lot of trouble and drugs and things, and then slowly has, and now she's a fucking hot property. Peacock is doing a new show with her called Poker Face that kind of looks intriguing, but it's Peacock, so I never know if I'm going to actually be able to watch it or if I'm going to have to pay them money. So, but Natasha Lyonne is the primary character. The TV show starts with her looking in the mirror in a bathroom at her friend's apartment, where her Natasha Lyonne's 36th birthday party is happening. Very shortly after this, she ends up dying, like a couple minutes later. And instantly, she is back in that bathroom in front of that mirror, and the party is happening. And she is back to the point she was. And we quickly find out she's in a time loop. She keeps dying and coming back to that point. And then it's all about, why is this happening? How is this happening? What do we do about it? What does it mean? All of that stuff. It's really good. It's very creative. She's amazing. It's fun. I would say it is sort of in a dramedy camp. There's a lot of joking going on. It's pretty funny. But season one ends pretty solidly. Like, it resolves. I assumed it was a limited series and it was done, and I was very happy with it. And then they brought back a second season. So Trish was concerned. She's like, sometimes if you have a nice ending and then you feel the need to add more seasons, it just goes stupid as fuck. And also, she could not imagine what it would look like after. How, where do you go from there? I happened to catch a trailer, and it's the same characters, and they go a little, it is different, but it's still, it's a continuous story. And I wanted to see it. She was really humming and hawing, but I finally talked her into it. So we're watching it now. We've seen the first two or three episodes. It's still just as good. I highly recommend the show. It's also an easy watch. The episodes average a half hour, and I think there's like 8 in the first season and 7 in the second season. So I would highly recommend that. It's a good show. And okay. I think you would enjoy it, I think.
We watched John Wick last night, so I guess we're willing to watch just about anything.
The original John Wick?
Yeah.
Oh, come on. The original John Wick is not bad.
That's just not my thing.
Yes, but have you seen the sequels?
No.
Oh, they're so much worse.
Oh.
So much worse.
I didn't think it was bad. It's just not my thing.
No. It is an ultra-violent action.
Well, the couple things that I could see right away what made it work. Two things. One, they didn't try to explain all of the mythology or whatever. They just did.
Yeah.
They didn't try to explain it. One.
You're absolutely right about that.
Two, the action scenes didn't do a lot of cutaways or shaky cams or anything. You got to see things they actually happen. Fake.
Keanu Reeves actually killed all those people.
That's right. Those two things together made it better than a lot of action movies. But I mean, I'm not into action movies. I mean, Abby wanted to watch it, so it was kind of her thing. And I think she did like it. I think she might want to watch some more, but it wasn't my thing, but it was fine.
I do want to add a thing into this, which doesn't sound like a reason the movie's good, but trust me, it is. The very basic plot of the first John Wick movie is John Wick's a retired assassin with a dog. Some asshole kills his dog, and he proceeds to murder everyone in that guy's organization and that guy himself. Like, well, that's the whole thing. Keanu Reeves is a badass with a dog. Somebody kills a dog, and then the rest of the movie is getting vengeance for that dog. And for a lot of people, including me, I'm like, hell yeah. If they killed a person, whatever, but they killed that fucking dog.
Well,
all of them.
My observation is that every action movie is served better if the plot is super, super, super simple. Nobody's coming for the plot. Just make it a simple, straightforward thing, and that's what people will like.
So, the sequels
ruin all that, I suppose, except maybe the shots.
I mean, yeah, the action is still there.
Right.
And it is still relatively filmed well. His motivations, well, 2 and 3 and presumably 4 all sort of arc together, and even 1, but like in 1, his motivation is to get vengeance for the puppy.
Right. Which everyone's 2, behind that.
His motivations are different, and I was not particularly on his side.
Yeah, right.
The huge thing, which I love that you said it, is a lot of people's favorite thing about the first one was this weird secret assassin underworld and all this stuff. They go hard on expanding on that and giving you the details, and they don't make sense and they're dumb as hell.
I mean, expanding on it would be fine if they didn't sit there and try to explain it or anything like that.
No. They
find out there's another hotel in another city and find out some other little thing.
No. We delve into what's going on and who's, and it's Weeping Angel syndrome. They give us more information and we're like, oh, that's not nearly as cool as I thought it was.
Weeping Angel, huh? I mean,
That's how I call it. I've been using that term for years. Weeping Angel syndrome. It's when you get a really cool, vague thing, and then in iterations, because it was popular, people bring it back and tell you more about it. And the more you learn, the less cool it gets.
Well, that I also have a thing that I call that, and I call it Boba Fett syndrome. Boba Fett had this mystique and all this stuff, and then
is an equally brilliant way to phrase it. Yes, Boba Fett syndrome is very much that also, and John Wick is Boba Fett. Which presumably means the fourth movie is going to be all about him trying to make appointments with people in a small desert town while occasionally having long baths. And I'll be honest, if it is, I'm going to go see it. I may end up seeing it anyway, because I've told Trish, I'm like, I don't give a shit about John Wick 4. And she's like, no, we're seeing John Wick 4. She is also he gonna be initiated? She still loves it.
Is he going to be initiated into an indigenous tribe also? Should that
Oh,
happen?
I hope so. Oh, no, we have done that. That's the problem. The whole assassin thing, and we have the gold coins and everything. We invent so many more doohickeys that mean different things.
More doohickeys.
So many. And different, like, other sort of secret groups and everything. Also, I mean, I guess, spoiler alert, in John Wick's world, it now appears that, yeah, I'll say this, every single person in the world is secretly part of this assassin's brotherhood. Like, literally everyone.
You and I are part of it.
I say that glibly, but I also say that because I'm thinking back, and I have seen all three movies that have come out, and I believe there is not a single person in the movie that has ever, like, explicitly mentioned as not being part of that, or even shown to be not that. There's only people who are explicitly shown to be assassins, and people who we don't know. They don't have a big enough part. They don't have lines. Whatever. Like, it's ridiculous.
Yeah,
they're constantly coming out of nowhere.
Our whole podcast is a coded news
podcast
to all those people. Yeah.
Yep.
We're sharing the news of the whole organization in code.
And yeah, they're making a fourth one. Oy.
Well, love Keanu, though. They love him.
People love it.
He's very popular.
That was the whole reason people thought it'd be good. They're like, this is getting to people who really like the Matrix movies. You get to see Keanu doing badass action again.
Yeah, gun-fu.
Gun-fu, yes. That Pitch Meeting recently released a compilation of all three. And so we rewatched again, and that comes up. He's like, then he uses gun-fu. And the guy's like, I think that's pronounced kung-fu. It's like, no, sir. This is something else. Little PS2. This is mostly for you, but anybody else. The Honest trailer for Glass Onion has dropped, and it is on point. I highly recommend it if you saw that movie. And in fact, it caught things for me. But All right, we need to wrap up here. We are over time. We didn't get to questions. I told you we wouldn't. It's all William's fault.
Sorry.
Probably going to name this episode "Let's Talk About Sex, Baby," because between your class and my thing about YouTube, we mostly talk about sex.
I guess so, yeah.
And that's how you get those numbers, you know, keyword searches. Yep. That's how we're getting engagement, getting our Google AdSense. We know
and the Google assassins. Ads.
Yes, because assassins don't pay real well. Go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, and give your take on any of this, please. If you're brave enough to talk about whether or not you played video games with adult content, talk to us about your experience with that, or just your experience if you are aware of the industry, or your experience if you just found out about it here. That's got to be weird. How you feel about John Wick? How'd you feel about Glass Onion? Yeah, mostly we just talked about how do you feel about William furthering his education? I'm against it, but other people seem to be on board. write in to the email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. We really will talk about your emails, so get them in there and we'll talk about them. Go to azathetheater.com and look at all of William's oeuvre. Go to smashwords.com, buy my book Odd Wings for $3, and listen again next week. Or else, I mean, Krampus is on his off season, so I can send him to get you all. Or, no, sorry, Secret Assassin. A Secret Assassin will come get you. Not us. We're very lazy Secret Assassins.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.